Welcome back to Season 12 of The Global Enquirer. We are an undergraduate research podcast based out of the University of Virginia, bringing you stories from across the world to explain how global trends are impacting real lives and international politics. We're sponsored by the UVA International Relations Organization. I'm your host, AJ Lorienti. In this episode of The Global Enquirer, I'm talking to third-year computer science major Jack Cooper, who's been helping research this episode's topic, international cybercrime. Now, Jack, just to begin very broadly, can you give us a basic definition of cybercrime?
Of course, AJ. Now, cybercrime is typically defined as any illegal act that occurs online is conducted in an online medium. Usually when we're talking about it, we're referring to hacking and hacker organizations. While cybercrime is a very wide field, we specifically, in our case at the Global Enquirer, research the role ransomware gangs play in international politics and domestic security.
Well, that's very interesting. You mentioned ransomware while answering my initial question. For listeners who might not know, could you explain that concept a little bit more for us?
Of course. Now, to really understand ransomware, we first need to define malware. Malware is just any piece of software that conducts activity that hurts the user or otherwise impedes or hurts computer network operations. Ransomware itself is a specific type of popular malware. Not delving too much into the weeds, it locks down a computer and forces the user to pay a fee to unlock the machine. On average, the paid fee from a single ransomware attack as of 2023, in terms of the most recent figure, is around $1.5 million.
Wow, that's definitely a lot of money for a singular attack. So given the extent and the potential damage of these actions, how exactly do these cyber groups operate?
Now, I know with Hollywood, it generally we portray hackers and hacker groups as a single guy in hoodies sitting in a dark room in front of a luminescent computer screen, interspersed with phrases like, I've hacked into the mainframe. However, while this might have been true in the 1970s, these operations have evolved significantly since then. During the early 2000s, we saw the rise of SaaS companies, software as a service. These companies like Adobe and Salesforce create software packages, which they then sell to other users. Many hackers, particularly in Russia and the United States, looked at this business model and wondered if they could implement a similar system for malware. This evolved into the modern RaaS groups that we now know today, ransomware as a service. Generally, these groups take ransomware and then sell it to end users. Generally, there are three groups of people that we need to be aware of in this ecosystem. We have developers and distributors. These are the people and or groups that are developing ransomware for deployment. We also have affiliates. These are people who select a particular ransomware package that they purchase from developers and then deploy that on targets. We also have a third group, which until recently has been fairly small, but now it's growing due to the complexity of these operations, which is sort of supporters and service support. They sell different services and tools, you should probably could tell based off of the name, to both developers and affiliates to help them in their operations. This might be something like a stolen credential, or it might be something along the lines of a call center contract. It's really hard to overstate how complex and sophisticated these groups are now. We see all the time, particularly in the dark net, full-scale and very well-produced advertisements highlighting the benefits of different ransomware packages. We also see groups offering healthcare benefits to their workers. And even we've seen full-scale call center contracts with groups hiring out entire buildings in India fully dedicated to handling ransom negotiations.
Wow, that's certainly more developed than I would originally have assumed. So going off of what you just described, what have been the results of this new system of ransomware, international ransomware organization?
So it has really created a more flexible system that's created an explosion of sophisticated malware. Previously before this, most people, if they wanted to get into this, I hesitate to call it this, but line of work, they had to have an extremely sophisticated, in-depth technical knowledge of how these systems work. But we've now seen that that bar to entry has dropped significantly. Ransomware typically sold at everything from flat fees, the lowest being around $40, to percentage takes, where the developer takes typically 70 to 75% of the ransom, and then the affiliate takes the remaining percentage. Most developers include instructions on how to operate the ransomware, and some even offer to handle ransom negotiations for the affiliates. It's become something where, quite literally, if you have a pulse, you can probably operate this software. As a result, law enforcement is really struggling to respond to this development. Now that the developers and the people who are actually deploying the software are separated, it's very hard to shut down ransomware operations or even stop the distribution since you have this separation now. Many operations are also now multinational. This requires a cooperative international approach to tackle this issue that, bluntly, we haven't really completely seen the emergence of yet. It also creates interesting dynamics within these groups that previously we hadn't seen before. For example, one of the larger groups in recent years, Conti, collapsed in the wake of the ongoing Russian-Ukrainian war after issuing a statement of support for Russian operations in Ukraine. After the statement was issued, Ukrainian developers within the group went to the NSA and other law enforcement entities and proceeded to give them not only the source code for this ransomware, but also various tools to help immediately decrypt any computers infected with this software.
Well, that's extremely interesting. I think it's fair to say that this new landscape of ransomware definitely has an international political dynamic to it. What can you add about that political dimension for our listeners?
The role these groups play in shaping international politics is very difficult to assess, in part due to the opaque nature of their operations. Bluntly, if Russia, China, or some other state decides to do something in terms of their policy based off of a recommendation from one of these groups, we probably aren't going to hear about it. However, it's clear that many of these groups are connected to state entities. We've heard reports that North Korea has utilized ransomware payments to help fund their nuclear program. The current largest Russian ransomware group, Revolt, has strong connections with the Russian spy agency, GRU. And in particular, what we've seen is a shift as groups use the infrastructure set up by RAAS groups to set up similar services for spyware.
Well, that's something I've actually wanted to get a little bit more into. Can you tell our listeners a little bit more about the basics of spyware?
Of course. Spyware is another piece of malware that is installed without the user's knowledge, collects information about the user's actions, and then sends that information to a person. What's particularly concerning about this piece of malware is it's typically there are not only 0 days. 0 days refers to an exploit that we don't know about, some variety of security vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
There are also, at times, zero clicks. It requires no interaction with the user itself to actually install the software package.
Right.
Increasingly, we're seeing spyware overtake ransomware in terms of sales and presence in prominent cybersecurity attacks. And like I've said before, groups are using the same systems and business models as ransomware groups to distribute spyware to interested buyers. And this model is typically known as, ironically, SaaS, Spyware as a Service.
I see. So given the growing prominence of kind of this international spyware, how are countries reacting to the emergence of these new dynamics?
So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, we've seen the profits from both of these groups, ransomware as a service and spyware as a service, being funneled to state entities. And we started to see these groups begin to exert some influence in those countries. Shortly after a recent visit by Russian state officials to North Korea, we've seen that these ransomware and spyware groups have now begun coordinating their activities and working together, which certainly will increase the sophistication of the software they're able to produce. But the best documented effect that these new dynamics have had is with spyware. Many countries are really interested in buying and selling this software to help monitor people that they are interested in. And this can range from, you know, terrorists, various criminals, but also we've seen it used to target dissidents and political activists, particularly in more repressive countries. There's a lot of politics surrounding where these groups are based. We've seen state officials turn a blind eye in instances where they've been able to access the spyware for free.
Mm.
A lot of governments have woken up to this situation, and they are now recognizing that more international cooperation is needed. We've particularly seen a lot of collaboration between the United States and the European Union, which is certainly appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen additional funding go into, at least in the United States, the CISA. That's sort of the main cybersecurity unit within the United States government. However, these efforts remain dispersed, and they really don't seem to be a priority for most states compared to other issues like narcotics trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
In recent years, we've even seen some states go ahead and sell spyware themselves to help supplement their income. We've seen the best and most prominent example of this most recently has been the Lebanese intelligence agency has been reportedly, I think as it was uncovered in 2019, but they were operating a fairly sophisticated spyware services network for clients around the world.
Wow, it's really interesting to hear how even some governments are beginning to export this sort of spyware. I'm sure that's a very, very concerning development for countries that want to protect kind of their cyberspace in this new era. So to round off our story for the listeners at home, what's the impact of this? Why does all of this matter?
Well, as you said, this topic is extremely new. We were so new, in fact, we were unable to find an expert due to so few in academia actually looking at this issue or researching it. Mm-hmm. We've really seen an increase of states utilizing these ransomware groups as a source of soft power. One example in particular that we've seen is Chinese ransomware groups targeting governments in Southeast Asia, and at times while decrypting and allowing governments and companies access back to their systems, then turning around and handing over any information or documents they might have had access to the Chinese government. These sort of interactions are highly concerning, and obviously will need some variety of response to in the future. Moving beyond that, it's really important to emphasize that these software packages, particularly with the rise of smart devices and the increasing reliance we have on computer networks, have the risk of being the equivalent of a nuclear weapon. A cyber attack on Oldsmar's Florida's water treatment plant is a really good example of the potential impact sophisticated cyber attacks might have. Water treatment officials, on the day of the attack, water treatment officials initially thought someone was remoting in from IT to adjust some settings on the controls machine. Mm-hmm. Fairly normal stuff. The plant operator more or less ignored the cursor moving around on the screen.
Right.
Moments later, he had to jump over his chair to prevent several tons of poisonous chemicals from being dumped into the city water supply. Wow. By some estimates, this could have poisoned around 15,000 people. It's really also important to emphasize that there's not a lot of regulation or clarification on responses to these attacks or these software packages. This area of business, spyware as a service, has been called by the NSA and other U.S. agencies as the Wild West in terms of law enforcement. And there's a lot of questions about how these groups will continue to evolve, particularly with the rise of spyware. Will we see these groups have an increasing influence on global politics? Mm. It's really unclear, and it's a really important question to ask as we move forward to a more connected world that is increasingly relying on computer systems and computer networks to operate.
Absolutely. Clearly, we have a lot to think about going forward as methods of cyber warfare continue to advance. That's our episode. As always, thank you for listening to The Global Inquirer, and thank you to Jack for bringing us this story. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can follow us on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider following us on Instagram at UVA Global Inquirer.